I tried the national instruments, test and measurement, engineering, technical, very technical, B2B, and I just wasn't excited about it. But I'm excited about movies. I'm excited about TV. I'm excited about digital content. All content in general that excites me and has a connection and makes me feel an emotion, whether I'm laughing, crying, or scared. That's what I want to be a part of. And that's why I choose entertainment marketing. And that's why I also choose to teach students at the university.
This is Digital Marketer.
Hey everyone, I'm Mark DeGrasse, President of Digital Marketer, and this is the Digital Marketer Podcast. Today we're doing a special in-studio session with Steve Rossman, a professor at UT and also a longtime CMO. So we're going to be talking about a bunch of kind of marketing strategy, the status of marketing education in the university level and beyond, entertainment industry, and basically anything else that we want to talk about. So it's going to be a ton of fun. So welcome, Steve.
You know, with this whole AI discussion, like that was a topic we talked about in Nashville, and everybody's like, how do we use AI? AI is going to change everything. It's bad. It's good. It's whatever it is. What is it like in the university system? And it's like, we're just trying to figure it out. And I'm encouraging my students to use it.
Yeah. Oh, do stuff.
Yeah. This is like, you know, it's no different from the internet in the 90s when we were introduced to that. You could get anything you want as long as you know how to use it, you know. And if you know how to use it and you know how to fill out those prompts, then you'll get the results that you want. It's not going to figure things out by itself. So.
Well, I still think that innovation, I always talk about the human connection side of it, because I'm like, man, what AI is actually giving us is the ability to not focus on all the dumb technical whatever crap. Mm-hmm. Like, AI can take care of that. You get to focus on, like, how do you talk to people?
Yeah.
What are people interested in?
Mm-hmm.
What do your customers want?
Like, yeah.
The actual part of marketing that matters.
Yeah, yeah.
Because who cares about all that other crap?
Yeah.
Oh, no, it's taking away the data entry jobs and the research that is a pain in the butt, and like all these things that we don't want to do anyway. So I'm like, it's fine. Like, don't worry. There's no more boring office jobs available.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah.
You didn't want them anyways.
Yeah.
You'd be miserable. So.
Yeah. And they're always striving to do, you know, nobody wants to be the checker at the grocery store. You know, they want to be the manager. So how do they?
Why?
But that's the thing in marketing is nobody wants to be that, you know, that lower level marketer. They want to be that, you know, VP, senior VP, director, whatever, and they don't know how to use the tools to get there. And AI helps them figure that out and gets them something to be useful towards, you know, and figuring out who their customer is, figuring out what the marketing plan is, you know, and people are just so afraid of, you know, change, I think.
You said it right with the manual. Like, people want the manual. Like, here's how to do everything. It's like, there is no manual. There is no way to do everything.
Yeah.
Like,
especially in marketing.
Especially right now in marketing, because it's just like the methods are all over the place. The economy's all over the place. Like, brands, the concept of brand is coming back.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't anything for a while. Because it was just like, go on Amazon, buy whatever crap you need.
Yeah, and do you find that nobody knows what the true definition of marketing is?
Oh, nobody. Everybody makes it up.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny because I went from fitness. I actually got into fitness originally because there are so many content opportunities. You can make anything up because there's studies that support and reject exactly what you're saying. So nothing matters.
Yeah.
So I was like, I just make everything up. It's great. Yeah. In an ethical and good way.
Yeah.
You know, I still want a good product. But at the end of the day, it was like, I don't know.
Yeah, because I get asked all the time, you know, or I ask students, I'm like, what do you want to do? I want to do marketing. What was that
type
mean?
Of marketing?
What does that mean? I don't know.
I want to
market movies. Okay, we want to market movies. Well, do you want to do the creative part of marketing movies? Do you want to do the media part of marketing movies? Do you want to do the promotions? What is that? Communications, PR? Events, what do you want to do? And they're like, oh, well, maybe events. Well, that's just a part of marketing. It's not, you know, it's not marketing. Yes, it is marketing, but there's so many facets of marketing. It's like saying, I want to be an engineer.
Yeah.
Well, what type of engineer
what do you want to do?
Chemical and, you know, that's mechanical.
A skill. You know what it is? They're saying, I want this skill set, but not what they want to do with it. Mm-hmm. So maybe that's the transition we need to make for people. Like, well, what do you want to do with it? Do you want to make a brand big?
Yeah.
Why? What brand is it?
Yeah.
Who, does the brand have a lot of meaning? Is it helping people, or is it, I don't know, a weapons manufacturer?
Yeah.
I don't know.
And I think what people need to find out, like what with me, is I can't market anything. I have to be passionate about what I market. Like, I tried the National Instruments test and measurement, engineering, technical, very technical, B2B, and I just wasn't excited about it, you know. And but I'm excited about movies. I'm excited about TV. I'm excited about digital content. I'm all content in general that excites me and has a connection and makes me feel an emotion, whether I'm laughing, crying, or scared. That's what I want to be a part of. And that's why I choose entertainment marketing. And that's why I also choose to teach students at the university, you know, about marketing and building that connection with an audience. And it doesn't have to pertain to movies or TV shows or content in general. It could be anything that, as long as it's their passion. It could be marketing for fitness. It could be marketing for engineering. It could be marketing for medical devices, whatever they are passionate about. Or nonprofits, you know, they should do that. For me, it's entertainment.
Yeah.
You know, I love it.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, I think with entertainment, because I used to actually be way more into entertainment, because I loved movies and I would rewatch movies just constantly.
Yeah.
Well, they used to be good in the 90s.
Yeah, they were good in the 70s, 80s, and 90s.
And then they're just like, you know what, whatever, Marvel.
Yeah.
Well, we don't need to be creative anymore.
Well, I think I was thinking about this a lot when I was coming back from my trip, and a lot of content companies have now literally thrown up spaghetti on the wall, and hopefully there's an audience for one little strand of spaghetti. Yeah. But they don't know how to market it. Do they market it themselves? Do they, as Netflix or as Prime or as Paramount Plus, or do they market the individual shows that they're producing that cost a lot of money? And I think now they're like, oh shoot,
there's a risk.
These cost a lot of money to make. How do we then go back and, you know, raise subscription rates or cut content, or, you know, and then the writer's strike and the actor strike are figuring out, hey, you're making all this money through subscriptions. How are we making money? And then now you're doing this ad model and you're getting even more revenue. How can we play into that? Because before there was nothing like that, you know, that, especially in theatrical. And that's what these models are. They're based off the theatrical movie model, but they're not based off the TV and cable model.
Yeah, but it's all the same thing, you know. And really what we saw, and I think 10, 20 years of cinema has proven, is that you can't make a formula for entertainment because it doesn't connect with anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And really it's a focus on making money versus a focus on just providing entertainment.
Mm-hmm.
Like, do people think it's funny? No, we'll just put more laugh track in. Like,
yeah.
People don't know what's funny.
Yeah.
You know, and they went to this like really elitist mindset of like, we're going to tell people what's good. It's like, no, you're not.
Yeah.
You can try.
And it went from the, you know, in the early days of actual filmmakers telling people what is good to now these corporate entities, these media companies that are saying, this is what's good. And you're like, no, that's really not.
No, that's just good crap.
Yeah.
Nobody felt anything for that.
Yeah.
Well, I really think that the intention, the creation process, is where the soul is injected into the work, where they just leave that out a lot of times. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, we'll just write the script as it goes, you know. And really, because I love universe building.
Mm-hmm.
And so it pains me that I hate Star Wars so much. Because I'm into hard science fiction. Like, I read like extensive soap up, you know, or space operas,
called.
And the universes are meticulously built, where it's just like the technology, the stories, the culture, like all these characters, everything, it lines up together. And then you could write infinite amount of stories using that model. But what Star Wars did is it just said, like, you know what, the science part, you don't need that part.
Yeah.
Oh, consistency. Ah, whatever.
even the old Star Wars or the new Star Wars?
The new Star Wars. The old Star Wars was bad for a different reason.
Yeah.
But the new stuff is just like, they're just like, yeah, you know, whatever. Let the director decide the direction. Like, oh, I want to base it off of World War II naval battles in space.
And yeah,
like,
yeah.
God, no.
Oh, yeah.
Anything works.
Yeah, yeah.
So the gravity, you're dropping bombs in space, and what happened to, like, orbit? Basic space principle that's just like, nah, this will look neat.
Yeah.
It's like, no, that's not
that's not anything.
Yeah.
Or it is, but you can only be as good as that one thing is. You can't expand it to a universe because now, why not?
Yeah.
Why don't they have giant lightsabers sticking out of the starship since you're flying right next to them? Why not just slice them?
Yeah. Oh, I think we're also seeing, so you know, you're talking about science fiction and how that has changed from time. But now look at what we're going to be facing in the entertainment space with this whole Taylor Swift phenomenon. Oh,
you know, an article about that.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, so now you're going to see like Beyonce is going to be doing the same thing. All these artists are going to be doing their concerts live and in theater. And
I thought you were talking about the relationship side with Kelsey.
Oh, no. I wasn't going to go there. No. You know, it's funny because I think, you know, so you, when you were in my class, we were talking about it before you joined about how this, you know, this Kelsey and Taylor Swift phenomenon is happening. And these, I have a couple of young students in my class, and I know they have never heard of Travis Kelce. I know, 100%. And one of them was like, oh, I think he's one of the greatest football players ever.
All time.
And I was like, did you even know who he was before this Taylor Swift thing? I didn't ask her that. I didn't want to put her on the spot, but I could tell. You didn't know who this is.
Well, and then I just think of her, because I think Taylor Swift is probably the best marketer on the planet.
I
don't think there's anybody who understands what's happening better than her.
Yeah.
Just based on how she's done her career. And then I think, like, well, you know, if you wanted to access a market that has millions of potential fans that have never heard of you, mm-hmm. you could just cross segment and then they'll find each other.
There you go. Well, what she did, though, is she took away the label. She took away the music manager with Scooter mm-hmm. Braun and all that stuff, and because she knew her audience better than all the other suits that were around her.
So then
she took control of that versus, telling her what to do. You should make songs like this. You should target this audience. You should, you know, do these arenas. And she's like, no, I know who my audience is.
I'll tell you what they want.
And this is who they are. This is what they want. And I think artists lose track of that when they get into that music machine of, you know, the record label and the manager. And not to say that that's bad. That's good when you're starting out your career because you need that guy.
You don't understand anything yet.
Yeah. But she's figured it out. And she has a group of people. I'm sure she doesn't do it all herself. But she has a group of people who actually guide her.
Yeah, well, the thing is, and this is really where marketers should be. Like, I think Taylor Swift is like the model of, you want to be a marketer, be like her, because she gives authority to the people. I forget the book I read, but it was the guy who basically redeveloped her whole website like overnight, right before a tour, and then it just blew up.
Oh, wow.
But she's willing to give power to these people that she trusts to make the decisions. Mm-hmm. And that's really the sign of a good leader.
Yeah.
And really marketing, that's what you need. You need to be able to say like, hey, social media manager, here's what I want to accomplish based on this campaign. Here's the materials you have available, your marketing assets. Go.
Yeah.
Tell me what you can do. And then you let them either perform or not perform. And then it's like, well, I gave them, it wasn't my job. I'm not doing your marketing for you.
Yeah.
You're the social media manager. Go do social media.
Yeah.
And then they'd either do it or not.
Yeah.
So, I think what she does is the same thing. She just says, hey, you're the whatever, book me a bunch of crap.
Go, yeah.
Great.
I hate to interrupt our podcast, but I have an announcement about Digital Marketer's content certification. Content without a content marketing strategy is an expensive mistake, but it's one that most businesses are making. When it comes to content marketing, all content should be created with a clear purpose to move a customer or potential customer along the customer value journey. That's why you need Digital Marketer's Content Mastery Certification. You'll learn how to leverage a complete content system to strategize, create, and distribute content that just plain works. When you become a certified content marketing strategist, you'll master the craft of systematically creating and promoting content that drives noticeable revenue for any business, and you'll get a badge to prove it. Learn more right now at digitalmarketer.com/content cert.
Yeah, I mean, what she's done in the movie theaters, I mean, even you see on social media with all these kids and young moms who couldn't afford to go to the live show.
Generational too.
Yeah. And you see them dancing in the aisles. You know, if you had a movie musical that can do that, you know, Moulin Rouge and Greatest Showman and La La Land, you know, none of them have that kind of star power behind it and influence to get people to get out of their seats. Yeah, they may be able to cry and have that emotion, but not the emotional core that she has struck with her audiences and these new audiences now. And now they're all, you know, loving Travis Kelce.
They'll do whatever she says. Really, that's what you're trying to do with a brand. You're trying to say, I'm the authority, and you trust me because, well, for her, like, I really think she appreciates her fans. Like, she loves her.
Genuinely appreciates her.
I love you guys. Yeah, it's like, that's how we all should be.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
You should love your customer. They're giving you money. They give you support. They shower you with love if you do a good job.
See, and I think that goes back to marketers and marketing leaders. Are they doing it because they love the brand? Or are they doing it for the paycheck? And it's paycheck. You know, they like their lifestyle, like their houses, their
job,
cars. It's my job. And they hate their jobs.
That
affects the marketing of that particular product.
Yeah.
So I'm trying to, you know, change that at the university system at University of Texas is, you know, find something that you're really passionate about. Don't focus on the money. It's hard because generationally we've been taught, Make money.
The thing is, the old rules don't apply anymore. Before, you could say, like, hey, get your degree, go get your corporate job, move up the ladder, blah, 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 you're done.
Yeah.
You're making money. It doesn't work like that.
No, not at all. Yeah.
Like, you know, well, and then because of AI, again, a lot of those starting positions just aren't going to be necessary, you know? And really for, you know, for somebody like me, where I'm kind of like gone across all the methods, and I have the creative component and I have the business experience, I could be a marketing department.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's not very hard.
Well, you are a marketing department after what I just saw you do. I mean, all the developing those prompts for AI and doing the catalog that you're building. I mean, that is amazing because a lot of marketing leaders like yourself, I don't do that. Like, I can do strategy. I could do promotions. I could build relationships. I think relationship building is probably my strongest superpower. But, you know, what you do, like creating those strategies and then putting those strategies on the paper and on the computer is pretty amazing that you're doing it yourself. I mean, normally marketing leaders, let me let my agency do that. Let me do my shopper agency. Let me do my media agency. Let me do my creative agency. And let me do my managers to manage all those relationships. And then
I'm just managing things. Yeah. And I'm like, I think what's happening now is that's not going to be acceptable anymore.
No,
it's like, you have to provide the cohesive vision and you have to have at least an understanding of all these different components to manage them.
And you have to be passionate about the
product. And you have to be passionate. Yes.
Yeah.
And that's just absolutely essential. If you don't have that, then it's like, it's not going to work for very long. And you can see that because the shortest lived C-suite is a CMO.
Yeah, we were just talking about that, how it's, I think the average career span is like 3 years at a certain company.
Yeah.
But that's the average, but the median is like, I think it's 16 months.
That sounds about right. Because it's just enough time to be like, all right, you should know everything and be able to do everything.
Yeah.
It's not working. And the thing with marketing is that there's just so many metrics to show whether what you're doing is working or not.
Mm-hmm.
Where most positions, even like something analytical, like accounting, you could be like, well, we got hit with these taxes. We couldn't save the money. We didn't identify the expenses. We'll get it next year. And everybody's like, yes, accountant. Well, listen to you. Well, the marketer says, like, it's a brand new program. How the hell can it do all these things you wanted to do in 3 months?
They're like,
we just got to find somebody else.
Somebody
you can do it. It's like, no, it's the same function. It takes time.
Yeah.
I think because we have all the data, it's easy for people to be like, no, it's not working. You didn't increase the traffic. You didn't increase the revenue. You didn't do all these things. You're like, well, that's 1,000 facts.
So do you think, like, because I've been thinking about this a lot, you know, as we get into more of a technology society with smartphones. I'm a firm believer that with the advent of the smartphone, we've, you know, adapted to a customization society. Everything is custom to me, my shopping list, my clothing, my workouts, my cars, my house, my community is everything tailored because the phone gave me access to all that stuff. So do you feel that, executives have that same mentality when it comes to technology and that it has shortened our attention spans, you know, like our young kids, you know,
I was going to say that when we were talking about just like the students day versus us growing up, I think apps have made things too easy. where it's like before, like imagine getting on the internet. What'd you have to do to get on the internet? Like make sure nobody's on the phone.
Yeah.
Make sure it's quiet.
Wait for that.
That weird shuts down everything.
Yeah.
You know, and just hope it connects. And then you had to find stuff. And that was a difficult thing too. But nowadays it's just like, oh, you want that?
Yeah.
You need this. And even on the apps, you don't even, if an app is more difficult than you being able to figure it out in like a minute and a half, you just are going to delete it. Yeah. I do it all the time.
I am.
Oh, this is too complicated. Nah, delete.
I did that with TikTok.
You need to invest in TikTok.
I know I do.
TikTok is the best life.
I broke up with it twice because I was like, oh my God, I'm getting too overwhelmed. And I have Instagram and I have Facebook and I have LinkedIn. And
no, and TikTok, it's what I look at. 90% of my social media time is on TikTok because it's just like every probably one out of three is a video I'll watch all the way through.
Uh-huh.
And if you think of like YouTube or Instagram or Facebook or any of the other platforms, you're like, no, you'll be scrolling, scrolling, scrolling.
But that's my point. Like executives like yourselves and others, Mark, you know, you're an anomaly, but have we shortened our attention spans? And even the C-suite for the CEOs and the board members have attention, have shortened their attention span. So when a program doesn't work, it's like swipe left. I don't want that anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. It didn't work. You move on.
Yeah.
That's completely true. And that's, and I think since it is marketing, all social media is marketing. You just apply that to marketing.
Yeah.
Cause we haven't defined marketing. And really for me, marketing is a function that needs to be throughout the entire organization. There's no part of an organization that shouldn't talk to marketing.
Yeah.
And most of the time, marketing's like, here's the C-suite, and then here's the CMO way over here.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Oh, what's John doing? Oh, John's complaining again.
Yeah, yeah, he needs more money.
He says our customer service sucks, and that's why we can't retain customers, and he doesn't know anything, and he needs to stick to his lane. And you're like, no, all of that's marketing. Product development is marketing.
Yeah.
Customer service is
exactly.
You know, delivery, you know, fulfillment is marketing, like all of it's marketing. And if you aren't, if it's not all in line, then people are going to sense that because you've been sold a product where you're like, oh man, the salesperson, oh, this thing's going to accomplish everything. And then you sign up and you're like, I'm ready to go. And then the person, welcome to the program. I hope you're doing great today. And you're like, whoa,
what happened? Yeah.
And now it's completely inconsistent. Now you're mad at the salesperson.
Mm-hmm.
You're mad at the company for lying about what they would provide. And you're probably going to fire them as soon as possible.
Yeah.
Because you feel like a sucker.
Yeah. And that stems back to like our students and this younger generation of marketers. You know, they don't realize that all those things that you just listed is marketing. And when they say they want to be marketers, they have this look on their face like, I want to be a marketer, but I don't know what I have to do to be a marketer. And I just want a paycheck.
Then don't do that.
Yeah. Yeah. Don't do that. Don't do that. So, yeah, this young generation of students, you know, it all stems down to now elementary school, middle school, and high school, how they've, you know, been given so many opportunities through technology, through society, to be what does success look like? And I don't think they really know.
No.
You know?
Well, they don't know what they want. And honestly, you know, when we were kids, you could say, I'm going to be an astronaut or I'm going to be a whatever.
A doctor.
And now it's like, I don't know what's going to happen with healthcare. Mm-hmm. I don't know what's going to happen. Are we going to need pilots anymore?
Yeah.
Like, are we going to need like a whole list of things? And I'm like, I don't know. And I'm a futurist.
Yeah.
Like, that's what I do is try to predict how things are going to go. And I'm like, I don't know, past like 5 years, maybe. Like,
yeah.
I could predict like sort of what's going to happen. Beyond that, I'm like.
But I encourage them to learn a skill.
Yeah.
So that way they can, you know, do that particular task and then adapt to it. You know, if they're just marketers, what does that mean? They don't even know what that means.
No.
And they don't have that skill of strategy, promotions, of product development, of, you know, partnerships, of business development. And they don't have any of that stuff, but they know they just want to be in marketing. So this generation is interesting, and teaching at the University of Texas has been an eye-opening experience. I mean, the great thing about teaching is that you get to learn as much as you teach. I'm learning a lot from my students, and as you were part of, you know, 196.
Oh, it's amazing. Well, the students are all, I will say this about Gen Z, is they are very interested.
Mm-hmm.
They are doers.
Yeah.
Like, they do not like sitting around. And honestly, they don't seem as motivated by money as even our generation did.
Yeah.
Because for us, it was like, no, you make money. You make as much money as possible, and then you make more money. And then,
well, they don't even, they don't have cars.
No, no, they're just like,
they barely have an apartment. They either live with their parents or they live with a, you know, group of people that, you know, we were taught, you know, you get that car, you get that house, you live in this community, you have your kids go to this school. They're just like, what?
Yeah, I don't want to do that.
Yeah, I don't want to do that. You know, maybe later on, and I think society teaches them to you know, to do that maybe when they get older. But right now, I mean, they just want to absorb so much as they can, as much as they can.
Yeah.
And technology has helped that with all the apps. And but the attention span has really gotten a lot shorter.
It is. Well, I think that's the probably flip side, or the dark side.
Yeah.
Because it's like, man, they're very interested in stuff. They want to learn everything, but they also want to be experts at it instantly.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, part of the pain, part of the process of finding your passion, because everyone's like, find your passion. It's like, well, I don't know what your passion is. You haven't done anything.
Yeah.
Like, I started working when I was like 14, and I've had 1,000 jobs.
Yeah.
That taught me many things. And then now I'm at the point where I'm like, I'm passionate about teaching people things.
Yeah.
But it took 25 years of work.
Yeah.
Plus.
Yeah.
And then I figured it out. But this generation just wants it. Like, they want to skip that 25 years. I'm going to find my passion. It's like, you don't know anything. Your passion.
Yeah.
You say you know your passion.
Yeah.
And then you'll find out in a couple of years.
And one of the things I try to teach, because one phenomenon that I'm learning is, you know, it's always been about the grade. And if they don't get the grade that they want, they get devastated. Even if it's an A, they're like, why did I get this type of A and not that type of A, or this B and not that B? And I tell them, don't focus on the end result. Like you just said, don't focus on going 10, 15 years around or that grade. Focus on the journey that you just were on. You know, what did you learn throughout and you may have failed or didn't get the grade that you want, but how did you learn from that, you know, to become better? And I've even instilled that with my kids. You know, my son Cooper at baseball, he's like, oh, I struck out. Well, what did you learn from that? Oh, I should have swung this way, or I should have caught the ball this way, or made this, my footwork should have been, exactly, tweak it.
Yeah.
Fix it.
Yeah.
Fix
you it. Did another shot.
Yeah.
Who cares?
Right.
But no, it is, well, that whole like serious, like, because I think they're afraid of wasting time, because I'm kind of like that too, where I'm like, man, if I do something and I find out later that it was unnecessary, like I feel a loss, like,
yeah.
Oh, I lost that time. I should use it, blah, blah, blah. And I think for this generation, they feel that all the time, probably back to that instant gratification where it's like, no, you know, the journey is all of this is worthwhile. Failing is worthwhile.
And they don't want to waste time. If you look at your kids and my kids and even my students at UT, they're always doing something. They're always on their device. Even when they're walking to class, what are they doing? If you look on any, probably, if you go into Subway and you take a picture, I'm guaranteeing about 98% of those people are on their device reading something, listening to something, and just absorbing some kind of content.
Yeah.
And I think that's fascinating, but it's
not doing.
Yeah, it's not doing. It's not doing. Yeah, unless they're typing, but it's not doing. And that's one thing we need to instill in society and our students nowadays, that they need to learn how to do, not just absorb.
Yes, and the doing is just as important as the learning.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because if you don't apply it, then who cares?
Yeah, one of my favorite.
You're gonna forget it in 2 seconds.
One of my favorite quotes from Point Break. I'm going to date myself, but fear causes hesitation, and hesitation will cause your worst fears to come true.
Ah.
And that stemmed from, I think they were just about to, you know, jump out of the airplane. Yeah,
the 20-minute fall.
Yeah, exactly. With no parachute. And I tell that to my students too, because even executives, you know, we hesitate and we procrastinate because we're afraid to take that step.
Ah.
And then you get fearful of failure as you take that step. And I'm like, just take the step.
Take the step. Just fail faster.
Just do it. And so back to your point about, we just need to teach, you know, our kids, this new generation of marketers, and even our leaders, to just do it.
Go. And it's fine,
yeah.
You know, and that's another part of it, where it's like, I think as leaders, you need to be like, you know what? Failure is part of the process. Mm-hmm. If you're just looking for the perfect person, you're never going to find them.
Yeah.
Just let people make mistakes. Don't kill them about
it. Yeah, unless they're really making
it. Unless it's like just so detrimental and they're just in the wrong position. But for the most part, it's like, no, even the best people are going to screw up for a certain amount of time.
Yeah.
And then you just let them.
Yeah.
And even my father-in-law, he has a successful jewelry store chain, and he said the same thing. It's like, well, you know, of course they're not going to do it very well. They're not going to do it better than you.
Yeah.
How could they possibly do it better than you? You're the one that made the thing.
Yeah.
So let them try. Let them screw up. Don't kill them, and then just let them keep going, and they'll figure it out, or they won't. And you could let them go,
and you could find out if they're passionate about what they're doing at that in that process. If they want to, if they're passionate about it, they'll continue to improve.
They'll figure
it out. If they're not, then
they should be there anyways.
Exactly,
you know,
they should be doing something else.
Yeah, well, we call it, you know, freeing people to the market, where it's just like, here, you don't belong here.
Yeah,
go find something you do belong.
Yeah,
and that's fine too. And there's nothing wrong with that. So I think if we could take away the stigma of failure. And that is just part of the process. And it's a good thing because you learn something from it.
Yeah. And I think we broke that stigma when we were talking about this earlier about how the younger generation of students, particularly in elementary school, they're given so many opportunities to make better grades on exams over and over. You didn't like that grade? Take it again. You know, you didn't like it? Oh, take it again. Take it again. Take it again. They never learn how to fail.
Yeah. And that's, it's really important.
And then when they
gonna have it. Oh,
then when they do fail, they lose it.
Devastated.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like, no, it's fine.
Yeah.
Sometimes it just doesn't work.
I think that also spawns in relationships and TikTok and all that stuff because they don't want to be the one that failed the relationship. So they break up.
Yeah. You know,
I was in Nashville and I saw this. We were with this artist who she said she was with her boyfriend for 10 years and she's gorgeous, like beautiful. She's from London. She has a beautiful accent, gorgeous, like an easy 10 and a half. And she's like, yeah, I had this boyfriend for 10 years and he broke up with me via email and then cut me off on social media after 10 years. And I was like, either you are really crazy or your boyfriend, but it all boils down to failure. You know, nobody wants to take accountability to fail. Was it her? Was it him? You know, and she's blaming him. He's probably blaming her. So it's all about the failure, and it stems from the relationships. Even in, you know, marriages, you know, people don't, it then may not work out, and then you're like, oh, it's his fault. No, it's my fault. It's their fault, not my fault. And everybody's just afraid of failure. So what they don't do is they don't commit.
Yes.
And they don't commit in their careers. They don't commit in their personal lives. And it's a constant swipe left or swipe left or right.
Nah, that's really well said, because I think it's hard for people to give up. You know, and we were all taught that, you know, it's like, no, you got to go through the pain and blah, 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 which is probably more our generation where it was like, no, no pain, no gain.
Yeah.
And so for me.
Well, I haven't heard that in a long time.
Oh, God. It's just like, but we applied it to everything where it was like, for me, and actually there's a term called over control, where it's basically like you have so much discipline that you just push through literally everything and you shouldn't. Sometimes you just got to fail. Yeah. You know? And so because I was married before, and I was like, I just kept pushing it through, and I knew everything was wrong, and I just kept pushing it through. I don't quit. And it's just like, no, sometimes you should.
Yeah. Maybe that's why my body is saying, my knees hurt, my hips hurt, my back hurts. Stop working out so hard.
Yeah,
working out like you're 16. You know,
that's how I, you know, well, my training method has always been about longevity, because I was like, man, I always looked at older guys.
That's why you look like.
I always looked at older guys and I was like, man, that guy was like a firefighter and he was just a maniac and could do all these incredible things. And then he hit 40 and broke his back, broke his hip, and his knee doesn't work and all these different
things. It's like Ronnie Coleman. I mean, have you seen
it? Oh, no.
The great Ronnie Coleman. He is 8-time, 10-time Mr. Olympia.
Oh, yeah, those guys.
And yeah, he barely walk, unfortunately.
Well, that's like, it's like Schwarzenegger or Sylvester Stallone, where you look at them, oh, look, they got big muscles, and you just look at their faces, though, and you're like, that guy is in pain, and he's in pain all the time, and he's miserable. And oh, yeah, look at his big muscles. It's like, I had this guy, Fairfax Haxley. He actually formed the Olympia with Schwarzenegger.
Okay.
And I spoke to him, and he's like, you know what? If I could go back, I would do functional fitness because I'm in pain all the time.
Yeah.
And nothing else really matters at that point. And I'm like, yeah.
Maybe we'll teach students functional functional marketing.
Ah, well, that's I am writing a book about it.
Okay.
But the self-development part is part of it because it's like literally, I mean, even your mindset for business or for marketing or for relationships and connecting with your clients, all that stuff just comes back to how do you personally feel?
Yeah.
Because if you feel crummy, everything's going to feel crummy.
Yeah.
So it has to start with you just feeling better.
Yeah.
How do you be happy? Like, how about you not be in pain and not go for a while? Like, no, that can't be it.
Yeah.
There's be some mysterious spiritual awakening thing. It's like, yeah, that's part of it, but you're at like level zero.
Yeah.
You're talking about level 10.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, you'll get there, but stop being in pain first. Anyways, where can people learn more about you and your program?
Through my friends, through my community, but probably through LinkedIn. They could find me there. I'm pretty easy to find, especially in LA and Austin now. I moved from LA about 4 years ago to the Austin community. I'm originally from Texas, so I'm not one of those transplants.
Me.
Yeah. But I tell people that all the time. But where they can find me is probably on LinkedIn professionally and then socially, Facebook. But I'm tied into the entertainment community. I'm tied into the education community through Loyola Marymount University or the University of Texas here in Austin. So, that's how they could find me.
That's fantastic. Well, thank you so much for coming in. I loved coming to your class and teaching.
Thanks.
That was a ton of fun. And
your students seem great,
you know.
No, they're awesome.
You know, we'll fix them. They're going to be the best marketers ever. That's the thing.
Got to be optimistic.
And you know, who knows? I don't know. We need to get off on VR and AR, which I think is going to
tower
into. Oh, yeah. Well, we'll love you.
Well, they're still trying to figure that out because, you know, VR and AR have been, we've been talking about that since, forever.
Yeah.
And nobody's really figured it out yet.
I think AI is going to solve it though, and not because it's going to do anything other than, you know, edge computing on individual devices versus having to stream, which I think has been the bottleneck, right?
Yeah,
because you put a VR headset and now you gotta stream the whole environment, which is just too much data, so it ends up like Meta, which is just like
it looks like Nintendo.
Oh great, oh look, I'm in.
Remember Second Life?
Yes, Second Life. It's exactly like
Second Life. Yeah.
And so, I think what's going to happen is that the devices themselves are going to start processing a lot of the data that's needed. Now you don't have to stream everything. You can just stream the essentials, and the environment is created automatically through the device using generative AI.
What's that movie with Michael Douglas and Demi Moore? I think it was an R movie. It was about harassment. The bottom line was about sexual harassment, but he worked at a company that started that whole AI's attraction. No, I think it was... I want to say Disclosure, but it wasn't that. Anyhow, what my point was is, like, he puts on that headset and he's on this trampoline looking thing, and then he goes into that environment to look for these files.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I do remember. I know exactly.
He pulls out the file that he's trying to destroy, but at the same time, Demi Moore's avatar comes around and she starts deleting those files. You know, and that movie was probably like,
that was like
15, 20 years ago.
Oh, probably more than that.
Yeah. In the 90s, yeah.
But anyway, so I do think it's going to be a thing, only because, you know, as a marketer, what's better than controlling somebody's entire environment?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what we're trying to do all the time. We're trying to control your attention.
Yeah.
And so if you could encompass them in what you created, you could control everything.
Like Minority Report. Have you seen that movie?
Yes. That's all in your dreams.
Yeah.
Oh, and actually, there's a patent out for that. Anyways, all right, we can keep talking forever. Thank you for coming on the show.
That
was a ton of fun, and we'll have you back soon.
All right, thank you so much.
This is Digital Marketer.
Get ready for the two easiest ways for you to generate product photos for your e-commerce store. I'm Lauren Petrullo, founder and CEO of Mongoose Media and Digital Marketer Academy faculty member. I've managed over 50,000 SKUs for over 100 different e-commerce sites, and I cannot tell you the importance of quality product photos. Not only are they important for your website, but they're great to be repurposed in your email marketing campaigns, your paid ad initiatives, and your organic social media content. It's imperative that you have great photos, because great photos sell your products and start conversations with your consumers. There are two great solutions when seeking out quality product photos for your e-commerce site. One, UGC. We know that native user-generated content wins all day on social. When you can get your customers to share back their use of your products in their voice, in their personal applications, you will see dividends when that is repurposed in your paid ads and organic social feeds. Secondly, don't have customers or UGC yet? Not a problem. There are cost-effective solutions in which you can outsource that photography. This and so much more is covered in my modules in our e-commerce cert with Digital Marketer.